Support for Talking Art on WVIK comes from the people at Quad City Bank and Trust, helping the local community with their banking and financial needs for more than 20 years. Information is at qcbt.com.
This is Carolyn Martin, and I'm talking art today with Cecile Well, whose numerous portraits of Nobel Peace Prize laureates are currently on display at a variety of locations throughout the Quad Cities. Welcome, Cecile.
Thank you for having me, Caroline.
Now, 20 of your large-scale portraits can be viewed now, the majority of them at the Breskin Gallery in Bettendorf and at the Quad City Arts Airport Gallery. Describe this body of work for those who haven't had a chance to see it yet.
Okay, so I've been building this Nobel Peace Prize collection for about 5 years. I have the ambition to do them all since the beginning of the Nobel Society. And I'm extremely honored to be invited by the Breskin Gallery and the Quad City Arts at the airport, the Moline Airport, to display all of them, which I just signed the number 20 about a month ago. So, and I have also two paintings at the German Heritage Center and Museum, and two paintings at the Adler Center. So, really, it's a important exhibition here for me and in the Quad Cities.
Mm-hmm. What materials do you work with?
So the paintings are 4 feet by 4 feet, and they are all in oil. But I also have displayed at the Breskin Gallery some studies, because I do 4 preliminary studies, either in charcoal or in pastel. And so it's about five. I do 5 paintings for each Nobel Prize laureate.
So these are large, you'd said 4 by 4 feet, yeah. And the size of the canvas allows the figures to be life-sized. Because they're rendered so realistically, there's almost this feeling that you're looking directly at them, not just an image of them. You know, while you stare into their eyes, they are looking back at you.
Yes, it was exactly my intent. I decided to put them all at the same level, to do them life size, and so that when I display them all together, you know, there is that strong presence of them facing us. And so, yes, it's exactly what is my intent.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I really enjoyed is that in the background surrounding the images of the particular Peace Prize laureate are artifacts or images of the means by which they championed peace and the means by which they effected change.
Yes, so true. So that's actually a very fun process for me when I build those paintings, is that I immerse each time into who the one I choose, who he is or she is, what they have accomplished. So, and then I have to find an interesting composition, kind of simplified, because of course it's very complex, but simplified in telling, you know, a narrative that will explain why they were awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's very interesting, because you know, I get to know it takes me about a month to do those paintings, and I get to get very familiar with the subject.
Mm-hmm. Some of the Nobel laureates are very well known, you know, Martin Luther King Jr., Mother Teresa, and the Dalai Lama, but others are not instantly recognizable. And one of the remarkable things about your project is learning about the work of those other people, like Rigoberta Menchu. I didn't know about. She's from Guatemala, or Lema Bawe from Liberia.
Yes, yes. And that's the same process with me. Of course, the most famous one, you know, they are universal figures. And obviously, Martin Luther King and Mother Teresa, to name just them. But yes, you know, the Nobel Prize was founded in 1901. And since then, almost every year, there has been a Peace Prize awarded. So that makes a lot of people, some that we don't really know because they are, you know, from the 1900s, and some that are not as famous. And so I think it's very interesting and informative to slowly discover who those great people are, because they all accomplished something fabulous in their life. And that was always to make actions to make peace in their troubled area.
Mm-hmm. People should know that they can download, it's called A Passport for Peace from the Bereskin Gallery website. And it was put together, I think, by Pat Bereskin. It's a wonderful guide to the portraits and would be a good supplement for students who are at home now learning online, or just anyone in the community who wants to learn more about the people you've painted.
Yes, people can download and have the bios of all those Nobel Prize. And, you know, I'm just a number 20. My goal is to do them also. I do about 10 of them every year. So maybe next year I'll be about 30. And so it can be additioned. We can addition every year more of those bios. And yes, you can, you know, learn about those great people at every age, you know, at a young age or later on. I'm still happy when I discover a new person and all the great accomplishments that the person has done.
Mm-hmm. You'd mentioned some of the preparatory sketches and drawings that you make. Can you describe the process by which you make these portraits?
Yes. So first, there is a time where I look for photos. So I need some images, actually. I find them, of course, on the net. I'm not lucky enough to approach. Some are still alive, free of rights. So I always I'm careful. And anyway, I change. Often I will take, for example, the head of one photo and then the body of another photo. So I make a complex composition. And so that's why the reason of those preliminary studies is that I have to know where I'm going on the big painting. So I do one or two studies just of the head and the bust, one in charcoal, one in pastel. And then I do two studies that are a little more complex, especially the last one, the fourth one, is going to be quite similar to what I will have in the oil. So it takes me really a month to do one, and I do everything myself. I stretch the canvas, I prime it, like, you know, the old masters, I put hide glue. It's linen, so it will last for many, many, many years. It's quality canvas and painting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really extraordinary to hear about it. Just the amount of detail and the amount of work. And I'm guessing you just kind of know when you have the correct image that you want to portray.
Yes, it's a, you know, it's kind of a feel that this is the right composition and the right story behind the person.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a challenging time we're living through now, and your work has arrived in our community really with impeccable timing. Seeing your work up close is a balm of sorts. It's a, you know, kind of a temporary respite from the social and economic struggles we're dealing with. To be able to look at the individuals from around the world who've worked so hard to make this a more peaceful place, what was your inspiration behind creating these?
So to begin with, I traveled the world, and I am from a Muslim mother and a Catholic father. And so I witnessed racism, I witnessed unfairness, rejection, and all those that are absolutely the opposite of peace. And so when I said always that when I heard the speech of Martin Luther King, I had a dream. That was really something remarkable that really changed me, and that brought me some awareness about.
And how old were you, do you think, when you first heard his speech?
I was, I think, 16 or something like that, around that age, as a teenager.
And where were you living then?
I was living in, actually, Paris, in France. Yes. But my early age, at my young age, I lived in Tunisia, Morocco, Iran, so countries, Muslim countries, and then when I came back to France, I lived many, many years in Paris until I arrived in the United States.
Mm-hmm. And what brought you ultimately to the United States?
A husband. I'm an American man, and I came. We married in France, and we stayed there for 3 years, and then we decided to come back to the United States because he had difficulty learning French, and so it was a problem. And I was very excited by discovering I've never been in the United States before, and since then I became a citizen, and I'm a proud American. Mm.
And right now you're living in Burlington, Iowa.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I really love that story of your background, witnessing some injustice, which we see everywhere. We see that here, certainly. And then deciding as a contrast to paint these portraits of specifically of the Peace Prize winners.
Yes. I want to bring the light on those remarkable men and women. They dedicated an important part of their life, and sometimes their life, they gave their life, like Martin Luther King, of course, to fight for peace. And they made some changes. Of course, our world is in constant evolution. It's far from being perfect. We know that. We live still in very troubled times, and especially with this COVID crisis, our system is kind of we have time to reflect on ourselves right now, and we see a lot of things that can be better, and the figures also like Mother Teresa, a woman that was field of compassion for the most the poorest and the people of the world. So this is really something that I will continue to do the next 10 years or so. And so it's a lifetime project to bring light to people that want a better world.
Mm-hmm. Yes. When you look at these portraits, not only are you, at least I felt this way, just somewhat in awe of what these various people from so many different parts of the world have accomplished, but it makes you think about yourself more. What can I do to make a difference in my community or in the world? And I think that's really a unique contribution that these portraits bring to us now in a period in our lives where it's stressful, where things are changing rapidly, where we are more isolated. But being isolated gives us that chance, that time to reflect more.
Yes, so true. And that's why I call also this show, Nobel Peace Prize Collection, Peace Starts Within. I so believe so. Because as long as we don't reach that peace within, I don't see how we can be at peace with anybody else. And it's a difficult process because to attain that peace, we have to reflect enough that we are going to realize how much conditioned we are. We are built with the social expectations that always rich, you'll be this or you'll be that, and you. So if you don't, you're not successful. So we always want to fit, and therefore being accepted or respected in that way. But if we take that time, and actually this crisis has given us this time to sit and just think. And it's something important that I ask myself, who am I that I don't see? So beyond that image that we have built and others have imposed also on us, who are we? And this beyond that visible me, there is this mysterious being that I say is made of the five elements. So earth, water, air, fire, and ether. For me, it's a magical alchemy of energy. I think that when I feel that, I feel connected to everything else. And so by attaining this feeling that I cannot really explain, I finally find some peace saying, I don't want to necessarily fit with all the expectations. I want to be out of expectations. I want to fulfill something that is beyond just social expectations.
Mm-hmm. I listened to an interview where you described several pivotal moments in your life that had a great influence on your becoming an artist. One of them occurred when you were around 8 years old. What happened to you then?
When I was
eight, yeah. You received an art book for your birthday.
Oh yes, of course, yes. I was a little girl and I had all those little friends, and one of my friends, I was always very good at drawing at school. So sometimes my girlfriends would say, please, can you do that for me or something? And so one of my girlfriends offered me an art book. And in that art book, there was the very famous painters, Michelangelo, Leonardo da Vinci, some old masters like that. And I just opened that book and I was absolutely fascinated. I actually took my fingers, started to trace with my fingers all the Mona Lisa and all the very famous paintings of Leonardo da Vinci. And I started to actually copy them. And that was really a revelation for me of being, I want to do this. This is a call, a deep call. And I received also a disc and the same age at eight. And it was classical music. It was I say it in English because I'm so used to say it in French, but the Fantastic Symphony of Hector Berlioz. And that marked me for life too. I mean, so I wanted to be a musician first before being a painter. And so I started classical guitar, and I almost achieved, I was preparing the National Conservatory in Paris with Alexandre Lagoya as a teacher at that time. But I met my husband, my first husband, at age 19, and I stopped playing classical guitar because I had my first daughter right the same year. And so those moments of at the very young age brought me like a call, and I never has left me since then.
And then in your early 20s, I think you had there was another influence, a near-death experience that,
oh, yes,
again, changed your path.
Yes, that it brought, it's like I was sealed almost. At age 23, I had a miscarriage, but not, you know, at a very early stage of pregnancy, and I had to have a little surgery. And when I woke up from the anesthesia, I lived at what we can call near to death experience, although I was not near to death, but I lived exactly this feeling of coming back from a tunnel of light. So I was seeing myself coming back from that light that I cannot describe, and it was like a tunnel. So the tunnel was dark, and I was coming back from the light. And a voice was telling me, "You will be more famous than Picasso." And of course, I say that with humor, you know, it doesn't mean that much because we don't know where, you know, the fame and all that is out of our reach. It's something that will happen or not. But it was so fantastically powerful that it's like it was yesterday how I lived that. And then so when I was waking up, I was saying loudly, and the nurse that was there was, I was agitated, and I was saying, "I will be more famous than Picasso. I will be." and the nurse was saying, "Yes, madame, yes, calm down. But I know, and I, of course, it's a funny story, but also coming back from that tunnel of light is an experience that luckily I can describe, but it's the feel of it is not really something that I can describe, how powerful it was. Mm-hmm. And in me also.
Well, you were painting. It sounds like you started really painting quite voraciously after that. But your formal training occurred relatively later on in your life when you were past the typical or usual age of a student. And you were working with pastels back then. Can you elaborate on the impact of having a vigorous period of formal instruction versus being essentially self-taught?
Mm-hmm. So I am actually almost self-taught, except that I met a remarkable master pastelist, a Frenchman, Alain Victor, who was my master for about 2 years and a half. I studied with him very intensely the technique of pastel and achieved a portrait a day with him. So I would have a class every Wednesday, but I would come as every day I would do one portrait and come with six of them, and then I would achieve one with him in the class. And that for 2 years and a half. So it's a lot of portraits. And he was a remarkable painter, naturally talented. And so he pushed me, and I'd had no interest really. I like doing still lifes or landscapes. I love them. But my interest was for humanity. And so I painted all kinds of humans from life, from photos, you know, anything that was interesting or moving me, I would paint. And I also studied art history at the Louvre in Paris for 2 years. But I was a mother, in the same time, I was a mother of young children. So I didn't go through the whole studies there of 4 years. And so I always, when I started to paint, I was already an adult. I was already a mother. And as soon as my children were at school, I would go and paint the whole day until I get them back from school the afternoon, and became a professional artist at age 40.
At age 40.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So meaning making a living with it at 40. So it's been about 15 years.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like such a journey. Your studio right now is in Fort Madison. You moved to the States. How would you describe that space there, and how did you end up working there? You're living in Burlington. They're close, but there's still a little bit of distance there.
Yes. So it's opportunity. When I divorced my second husband, I was looking for a studio in Burlington, but I had in mind some very large paintings. And so I was looking for a large space, which I didn't find in Burlington, or not at the price I could afford. So I look, and I remember Fort Madison had this main Avenue G with a lot of buildings empty. And so I went there, and I found that magical, absolutely magical space that is my studio, very, very large space, where I started to do murals that are 10 feet by 14 feet, very huge paintings. That is another project that I have that is called the God's Feet Project. And but it allows me also to do the Nobel Prize. So it's big enough that I can have multiple projects. I'm also a lover of the Mississippi River, and I meditate at the river every day, absolutely every day, and pick up wood. And then I do driftwood sculptures, which is something new about 2 years ago that I started, but I absolutely love. It's like a recreation for me from discipline and the precision of painting realistic paintings.
Because your portraits that are here now concern the Nobel Peace Prize laureates, I thought it'd be fun to talk about Alfred Nobel, because there's a very interesting story about him, the Swedish chemist and inventor, and how he came to establish the Nobel Prizes.
Yes. So it's a very important figure because his legacy is so important. Of course, the Nobel Society. So this man is an inventor. He was very talented, very smart. And one paradox is that he invented the dynamite, which is one of the first mass destructive weapon. So it's a paradox. And but he was really supporting a lot some peacemakers. And when he realized he had no descendant, he didn't have children, he had this immense fortune because he was a very successful businessman. And he decided that he would donate his fortune to create a foundation that would award, you know, all those different disciplines like physics, chemistry, medicine, Faisology, Literature and Peace. And so after his death, that was sudden, the Nobel Society, he dedicated $265 million. So it's quite, you know, quite some funds that can accomplish things. And so the Nobel Society was founded after his death in 1901. And since then, every year, this wonderful society awards some important, men that are contributing to mankind evolution. So it's quite important. The Nobel Society often has given prizes that are controversial, and but nevertheless, all the people that were awarded are remarkable men and women.
Mm-hmm. They sure are. There was this other story that I thought was quite humorous, that initially Alfred's brother had died while he was in France, and the French newspapers mistakenly thought that Alfred was the one who died. So they published his obituary when in actuality it was his brother who had died, and they really condemned him, criticized him for his invention of military explosives. And when he read that obituary, he was motivated to leave a better legacy behind, hence the establishment of the Nobel Prizes. And you know, really, you could say now in this day and age, they're all important, you know, the prizes for chemistry and the scientific awards, but the Nobel Peace Prize really, I think, is the highest honor in terms of serving all of humanity.
I totally agree with you, and I heard this story about the wrong obituary, and one reason that motivated Alfred Nobel to reverse that in giving money for, you know, the causes like peace.
Well, Cécile, thank you so much for talking today. Your work is stunning.
Thank you so much, Caroline, for having me today. It's a pleasure.
Make sure you see the portraits of various Nobel Peace Prize laureates by artist Cécile Well at the Breskin Gallery and Art Academy in Bettendorf and at the Quad City Arts Airport Gallery. Additional work is also at the German-American Heritage Center and in the River Center Adler display cases. The exhibits will be up through the end of October and are safe to view with a mask and social distancing. You can download the informative Passport for Peace online at BereskinArtGallery.com. You can also view her work at Cécile Well, that's HOUEL.com. This has been Carolyn Martin, talking art in the Quad Cities for WVIK.
Our theme music is provided by a Quad City legend, the late Ellis Kell.